1320 AM and W248DE broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
From Lake Wazeecha and beyond, your news, talk, and sports is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. The U.S. Army grounds non-critical aviators after fatal crashes. The latest took place yesterday in midair in Alaska, killing three soldiers and injuring a fourth. More from CBS's David Martin at the Pentagon.
Across the entire Army, they're going to have to stand down and review all of their safety procedures because the trend so far this year has been really alarming. There have been three fatal helicopter crashes so far.
The AH-64 Apache helicopters that crashed yesterday were from Fort Wainwright, based near Fairbanks. Hail pounds homes and cars in Bell County, Texas, as severe weather moves across the south. CBS's Omar Villafranca is in Dallas.
Here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, we're watching some storms that could come through later on in today. South of us, there's already severe thunderstorm warnings, tornado warnings, and also flash flood warnings for hundreds of miles, all the way down to San Antonio in the San Antonio area. So as this storm kind of sweeps across the state, that's what people down here are keeping an eye on.
A U.S. State Department spokesman acknowledges an evacuation of American civilians is taking place in Sudan. It comes during an extended truce among warring factions in the capital of Khartoum. CBS News military consultant Jeff McCausland explains why the overland evacuation is so dangerous.
The so-called rapid response forces, paramilitaries, are largely in control of rural areas. They are well-armed, but in many cases very poorly disciplined. They are further known for atrocities that they committed against civilians during the war in Darfur, and it is estimated that during that conflict, over 400,000 civilians were killed.
The Government Accountability Office takes a close look into the reasons behind flight cancellations. CBS's Christopher Cruz on what investigators found.
The GAO says during the travel industry's recovery from the pandemic, most of the increase in flight cancellations has been due to situations the airlines themselves have control over, like maintenance issues or because a flight crew wasn't available. Government data has shown that much of the increase in airline-caused cancellations has happened at low-fare airlines, but the big carriers are also causing a higher percentage of their own cancellations.
Pope Francis arrives in Hungary for a three-day trip where the war in Ukraine, migration, and Europe's Christian roots are expected to top the agenda as he meets with Hungarian leaders. It is the pontiff's first trip since he was admitted to a hospital for bronchitis in March. It's day two of the NFL draft. Will Levis has landed with the Tennessee Titans. The Kentucky quarterback was the biggest name on the board when the second round kicked off last hour. Wall Street closes out a winning April with gains, the Dow up 272 points. This is CBS News.
Hire with minimal effort and maximum success with Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Let's be real. Mopping is a hassle. You have to fill the bucket, pushing a wet, heavy mop around, then cleaning the mop when you're done so it doesn't grow bacteria. A hassle on top of a hassle. Try Swiffer WetJet. With Swiffer WetJet, you start with a fresh pad and cleaning solution every time. And when you're done, you just toss the pad. Swiffer WetJet, the faster, easier, cleaner way to clean your floors.
Scott for Scott's here.
Do you hear that? Bring the mic in close. That's not how the grass should sound. There's weeds everywhere in this lawn. It's time to take action with Scott's Turf Builder Triple Action. It gets three jobs done at once. Kills weeds, prevents crabgrass, and feeds your lawn so it keeps growing strong. Ah, much better.
Get a bag of Scott's Triple Action today. It's guaranteed, or your money back.
Feed your lawn. Feed it.
Hi, it's Jim Polzine from Badger Extra and the Wisconsin State Journal. Have you checked out BadgerExtra.com or the Badger Extra app powered by our top-notch Badger coverage team? Subscribe now to get extra coverage, including extra analysis, extra recruiting news, and one-on-one athlete interviews. Plus, subscribers get my exclusive podcast, Open Gym, where I answer your Badger questions. Go to BadgerExtra.com or search Badger Extra in your app store. Download and subscribe today.
My name is Juanita Segura, and I was diagnosed in November of 2014 with non-small cell lung cancer. The first time I heard about biomarker testing was actually my husband. He just started researching about lung cancer.
And I found out about biomarker testing, and I'm like, why not? Let's try it.
I'm Dr. Jorge Gomez, thoracic medical oncologist at the Mount Sinai Hospital. Comprehensive biomarker testing is looking for either substances in the blood or mutations in some of the genes of the cancer cells that can help us identify special types of lung cancer that can be treated with what we call targeted therapies.
Letting my children know brought all of us a sense of hope, to give them hope that mom is going to be around to see you grow up. And I promised them that.
Ask your doctor about how comprehensive biomarker testing before treatment may help you and your doctor decide on the best treatment for you. Visit noonemissed.org for more.
A public service message from Longevity Foundation.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Chance for scattered showers tonight, otherwise cloudy. Lows dip down to about 42. Winds out of the northeast around 5 miles per hour. Overcast tomorrow. Chance for scattered showers 45. Cloudy again tomorrow night. Mixed precipitation possible at times. Lows dip down to about 34. A dusting of snow Sunday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently it's 65.
Stop surfing the dial. You've found the greatest radio station ever. Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
United States is for Fig Newton. It was named after Newton, Massachusetts.
Oh.
I haven't had a Fig Newton in a really long time.
It's because they're bad cookies.
Man, you're really downing on a lot of things that I like this morning. Jeez, don't yuck my yum.
Don't what?
Don't yuck my yum.
Got it.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Medner. And when I feel like when the average Wisconsinite hears venture capital, they think of Silicon Valley,
California,
whether the real place or the HBO show. But they don't necessarily think of Green Bay, Wisconsin. And yet, Titletown Tech is based in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And so I think about last month or earlier this month, we talked to Missy Hughes about the different stuff with startups and the culture that's happening. We've talked to Mayor Cavalier Johnson about trying to make Milwaukee the next tech hub. And as someone who worked in tech, I am very excited about the prospects of that being a growing industry and trying to get more people to start their companies here, get people to move here. And so our next guest is here to talk more about that. He is the managing director of Titletown Tech in Green Bay, Craig Dickman. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's really nice to meet you, Kristen, see you, Jane. And so look forward to talking about it. And you're right. It's all about changing the narrative around venture capital in Wisconsin. And one, they do fit together. And one other thing that I really like is the fact that you spent some time in venture and now you're in Wisconsin. That's a story that can be repeated over and over and over again.
I'm not working in venture, though. I am in radio.
Oh, I know. I totally get that. But you were in it at one point, right?
Yeah.
And you mentioned that, so you're in it.
And that was something, and maybe this is a future project, you know, when I have more time on my hands. But I think there's a story to be told of the different boomerangs who left Wisconsin and came back to Wisconsin and what they're doing now and what brought them back. Because I think that there is a lot of talent that leaves Wisconsin, and trying to see how we can get them to come back is good. And I think tech is a really, really strong way to do that.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. In fact, that's one of the reasons, if you think about why would there be a Titletown Tech? You know, I think back to, I was a founder. I started a company before Titletown Tech called Breakthrough Fuel, started here in Green Bay. We ended up scaling to work not only across the country, but in 44 different countries around the globe. And one of the questions I got often was, why are you in Green Bay?
Mm-hmm.
Why not Silicon Valley? Why not New York? And it was because I wanted to live here. Mm-hmm. And so you think about, so often I would talk to people interested in founding companies, and there seemed to be one of two narratives that they went through. One was, I can't do it from here, which is fundamentally wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Or the other one was, hey, if I want to do it, I've got to move to the coast. or I've got to go where there's money. Well, that's fundamentally flawed too, because I think it's really important that we recognize there are great founders. There are people who solve really meaningful problems here. In fact, we've got talent to solve some of the biggest problems that you can think of here, and we need to allow them to do it from here.
And Craig, what is the reasoning for them believing that I can't do this in Wisconsin? What is it, lack of talent? Is it lack of infrastructure?
No, I think it's been a combination of things. I think one, it's the narrative that Kristen started off with. When you think of venture, you think of the coasts. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the problems. Then the reality is that, you know, if you look at money in venture and private equity, 75% of the money is in Boston, New York, and Silicon Valley. So there's a natural tendency to say, let's follow the money. And so people didn't think they could get funded here. Hmm. Now, I think we're showing that that's not the case. You can get funded here. There are networks, there are ecosystems here that are growing and emerging. And so I think that narrative was probably true before. It's less true now. And our job is to make sure it's not true at all.
Ever again. So
ever again.
Ever again.
Exactly. Ever again.
So I guess for people who are unfamiliar, I mean, you hear Titletown, you obviously think of the Packers, and I can see anyone who's watching the live stream right now can see your Packers helmet in the background. And so what is kind of the history and founding of Titletown Tech?
Well, I think that's one of the things that makes it interesting is that the Packers are part of the founding mm-hmm. of Titletown Tech. So the partnership that began really started with an idea that the Packers had. And if we go all the way back to the beginning, it really started with the idea that, hey, we're a unique franchise of the Green Bay Packers. Great brand, community-owned, smallest market of any of the professional sports. But that community-owned really gave kind of a different responsibility to the community. And for a long time, the Packers were really active, and they continue to be in the foundation and give money to important nonprofits in virtually every county in the state. But I think they also recognize that, hey, there's more that we can do around entrepreneurship and innovation. There's more that we can do to encourage talent to stay here, come here, or boomerang to here, as you mentioned before. And also, we're entering this digital economy, and we've got to think about how can we help facilitate for the companies that are here a transition so we can continue to compete and grow in an economy that's going to shift from making things in analog world, we'll still be making things, but to more digital. And so I think that was a catalyst to say we should be doing something different. What was really fortunate is when that conversation became part of the narrative that Microsoft was having also about, hey, you know, there's some things that we as big tech can do across the country to help improve quality of life, look at K-12 education, computer science upskilling, rural broadband, connecting people from all parts of our country to this digital marketplace. And the two got together and said, let's start something. Hmm. Well, that something became Titletown Tech. So we're a partnership that the Green Bay Packers and Microsoft started. And then what we did is really expand with a network of limited partners that are corporates from both around the state. And so we've got a great foundation. So instead of, frankly, going out and trying to get high-worth individuals or traditional institution, we got people who wanted to be part of an ecosystem involved. But we also knew that we couldn't create a Wisconsin bubble. And so you'd see that we've got an LP in New York, an LP in Boston, you know, we've got Microsoft in their mm-hmm. group on the West Coast, because we've got to connect this to the major capital markets and the rest of the activity going on if we think we're going to build something here that can scale. And so that's really how we thought about it with Titletown Tech. And then just one more point. When we started it, we thought, okay, where do we want to put our focus on both investing and building? Because you can't do everything. So we went back and took a look and said, what do we think the Wisconsin economy is really strong at? What's the foundation of some of the Wisconsin economy? Well, of course, because of the Packers, sports, media, entertainment became one of the verticals that we invest in. But then we looked at digital health and ways to use technology and data to improve health and healthcare. We've got great heritage here in Wisconsin and the upper Midwest around healthcare. And then advanced manufacturing, construction technology, simply building things. Mm-hmm. And we're great builders. The coasts tend to undervalue the importance of building things. We know that's still really important. And then the next one was supply chain technology or moving things. If you're going to be an economy that makes things, you've got to move things. And again, we've got a great history. And then the final one we looked at and we made something up, because it's fun when you're starting a company. You can make up whatever you want, right?
Nice. I like that attitude.
And so we call it AWE, A-W-E. It's agriculture, water, and the environment. So thinking about food, food sustainability, clean water, the environment, climate change, you know, issues that are important that we can make an impact on here from the state of Wisconsin. And so those are the areas that we chose to really focus on and build the networks around and say, you know, if you're an entrepreneur in the state and you're in those areas, or if you're somebody who's sitting outside Wisconsin and want to find a place to build, we want you to come and solve those types of really meaningful problems right here in Wisconsin.
We're talking to Managing Director of Titletown Tech, Craig Dickman, about Titletown Tech and about startups in Wisconsin in general. I like the awe. Well, it's also cute. I went to a dairy farm and did like a little video 2 years ago. And what I learned is just how advanced, like kind of all of the cutting edge technology that's constantly happening on farms. That I think
absolutely
the farms I visited in my like fourth grade field trip and actually got to milk a cow is very different than even the family farms today, that just the amount of technology of the cooling and the cooling systems for that are there for the cows to stay cool, and the pasteurizing and the fertility and all the different stuff. And so like that has to be huge.
Yeah. And what's so interesting is you can take that in, like you said, agriculture and food and move it across, you know, manufacturing. People think, you know, it's old manual or supply chain and don't realize the great tech, the innovation that's taking place, the people that are really changing and transforming the way these industries are occurring is happening. And so I think it's important that we change the way people think about those and then recognize that, again, we've got great companies here in those areas, but then there's so much intellectual knowledge and subject matter expertise within these organizations. They see the problems that exist. And I think we sometimes in Wisconsin don't give ourselves credit for being as creative as we are, because I think we've got great creativity in the state. And when you talk to somebody, they're like, hey, we're not that creative. And then I'll ask them, okay, but are you a good problem solver? It's like, oh, we're great problem solvers.
So, oh, that's okay. Interesting.
Well, let's just make innovation be problem solving, and now we'll be great at problem solving.
That's so funny. Well, and I was going to ask you, and how much? Well, we'll talk about it in the next segment, because I would love to know what you see kind of as the obstacles or limitations of Wisconsin. Because I've heard from other people that some of our we're a little too humble sometimes as far as Wisconsinites, and so
our, love like, to talk about that
can get in our own way as far as when it comes to pitching ourselves and changing the narrative. And so when we come back, I want to hear your thoughts on kind of what we still need to do as a culture or even in policy to continue to foster entrepreneurship. But also, and then I also want to hear which portfolio companies you're most excited about right now. So excited to have Craig Dickman here, Managing Director of Titletown Tech. We will be back in just a minute.
From the home of the Cranberry Blossom Festival, your news talk and sports station is Locally Grown Radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Welcome
excited about the techno music when we're talking about technology companies.
Robot Rock by Daft Punk. Ooh.
I'm going to keep that for rock, walk-up music, you know?
That's great walk-up music.
That's walk-up music. Absolutely.
Robot Rock for you, Craig, by Daft Punk.
We're talking to Managing Director of Titletown Tech, Craig Dickman, about Titletown Tech as a venture capital firm, but also as startup culture in Wisconsin and fostering entrepreneurship. And, you know, one of the things I would say, having spent time on both coasts, is people on both sides of the coast are not, they're not worried about bragging. They're not worried about promoting themselves and changing the world and their big, exciting idea and why they are the person to do it. And whether that's fake it till you make it or people who really just have egos that big, you run into it a lot. That is not the ethos of the average Wisconsinite as far as we're not very good at bragging. We're not very good at promoting ourselves always. And so how much have you run into that as far as founders that you talk to that either they aren't good at that part? Because even as you said before, as far as, well, we're not creative, but I'm a good problem solver. You know, I'm not this, but I'm a hard worker. And so is that something you run into a lot?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's so ingrained, this concept of Midwest Humble. And I think there's really a few things that we've got to change. One is Midwest Humble. And now we don't want to be like the coast.
Yes.
So I think we can be Midwest kind, but we can still be confident. Mm-hmm. And kind and confident is the way that we should be. Because I think I've seen so many founders in this state start off with, hey, I've got a great idea. And they get pumped. And then they start thinking about it and talking with their friends. And pretty soon it's like, well, you know, if it was a good idea, someone else had it, had it. Or, wow, somebody else, you know, maybe they're on the coast doing this already. I just don't know about it. We talk ourselves out of it too much. So we've got to quit talking ourselves out of starting things. Second, you're right. If you're on the coast and you have a conversation with a customer who might be willing to pick up the phone, you're probably putting out a press release saying, one of the largest companies in the world is talking to us. Yeah. And here, until you actually have a contract, you don't say something about that. Now, we don't have to get hypey and hyperbolic, but we've got to do a better job of telling our stories. We've got to do an absolute better job of telling the stories, telling us what's unique, telling why this really matters, telling why we can make a difference here. And so I think we have to really tell our stories with confidence. So a little less Midwest humble, a lot more storytelling. And I think it's really important that shows like this, you know, want to tell the story. And then the other thing is, you know, we're kind of, it's an interesting state in that it is a kind state. Mm-hmm. So if you're a founder starting a company, you can actually find folks who want to give you money to get started. The angels, family and friends, we're a kind state. You can find money. And then if you aren't successful, people don't feel all that bad. It's like, okay, well, you gave it a nice try. But we run into a problem if we're successful, which seems counterintuitive, because we move from being, you know, Wisconsin kind to now Wisconsin conservative when it comes to evaluating risk. And said, okay, you had a little success. You want a little more money. Now give me a five-year financial plan. Tell me what's future value of cash flows and all these things. And it's like, no. These are still startups. So we have to really reset how we think about that first level of risk as an entrepreneur when they've shown a little promise. Because we were losing, in my estimation, you know, when you hit that stage and were comfortable or confident that you had something, we didn't know how to deal with it from a risk standpoint. So you went to Chicago or you went to Minneapolis or you went to the coast to find money. And that's where, you know, so many great ideas and entrepreneurs start here. And I think if we can change the way we think about that risk, then we can keep them here and really build and grow. And there's no reason we can't be spinning unicorns out of here. But it is going to take a little change in how we think about risk as well as Midwest Humble.
That makes a lot of sense. I would say we're risk-averse people.
Yeah.
Why take a chance, people?
But we need to take chances because I think about that and I think about the companies I worked for that, you know, none of them were unicorns that ended up having a huge exit. And yet they were both Andreessen Horowitz backed companies, which is one of the big, big VCs.
Absolutely.
And the amount of, when you're in VC, the amount of gambles you take, right? And like, as far as like so many ideas and you try to help them as much as you can, not all of them are going to work, but that is part of the game.
Well, it is such a part of the game. And it's interesting, even here, I remember when we were first working with the Packers, you know, part of the conversations we were having is, you know, you have an organization who's really focused on winning. Everything's on winning to win championships. That's the focus. And so for them to invest and say, you know, we're going to invest in something knowing that a percentage are going to fail. I mean, that's a big mindset for an organization to say, yep, we know that if there's not folks failing, we're not taking enough risk on people. We're not taking enough risk on ideas. And so it has to work across that continuum. So we also have to change our mindset around, you know, what does risk and failure mean? But I think there's so much opportunity. And what I'm really seeing and what I'm really excited by is how even in the last number of years, last few years, you know, that concept has really changed and how many more stories we have to tell of portfolio companies. You know, I think about Titletown Tech. We've had three companies move from outside Wisconsin to Wisconsin, one from Los Angeles, one from Denver, one from New York. Each one of those had some roots in Wisconsin and they started building somewhere else. Now, we never say we'll only invest in you if you move to Wisconsin. But they felt, you know what, if we move, we've got a better chance of success. And we've got a great examples of founders who thought they were going to have to go to the coast for money and then realized that, oh, wait a minute, we can raise funds here and stay here. So let's do that. So I think we're getting the early stages of the kinds of stories that we need that can then really become part of the new definition of venture in Wisconsin.
Well, this has been fascinating. When we get up, when Jane and I get up to WGBW up in Green Bay, you'll be our first guest in person, Craig, because this was so fun, and I feel like we only scratched the surface.
Can't wait to have you in Green Bay.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Craig Dickman is the managing director of Titletown Tech. Check out their portfolio companies and be a little bit more risk-averse this weekend. I mean, we're risk-seeking. Risk-seeking. Whoops. All right. Thanks so much, Craig.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
News, talk, and sports on both sides of the dial from Wisconsin Rapids and beyond. Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
What grows in the forest? Trees? Sure. Know what else grows in the forest? Our imagination, our sense of wonder, and our family bonds grow too. Because when we disconnect from this and connect with this, we reconnect with each other and build family memories we will carry with us forever. The forest is closer than you think. Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. It's easy. Just put in your zip code to find family-friendly outdoor destinations near you. You'll also find guides to free activities, games, and amazing forest facts. Give the magic of the outdoors to your kids and reconnect with your family. Find a forest near you at discovertheforest.org. That's discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy. You know what? We should make an emergency communication plan. That way we're ready this year. At my dorm, we have emergency kits for earthquakes and wildfires, but I'm sure there's something more local I can send you with a link.
Okay.
Smart.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Parents, we know we can't protect our kids from everything. Eventually, they're going to bump their heads or scrape their knees. But we can protect them from six types of cancer. HPV, or human papillomavirus, is a common, preventable virus that can cause cancer later in life. The HPV vaccine prevents human papillomavirus and all the cancers it can cause. The American Cancer Society recommends getting your sons and daughters the HPV vaccine starting at age 9 to protect them later in life.
It'd be great if life came with a remote control. You know, you could hit pause when you needed to, or hit rewind. Like that time you knocked down that wasp's nest.
Uh-oh.
Or that time you forgot to roll up your windows in the car wash.
Fantastic.
Yeah, a remote control would have come in handy then. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome. But prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Life doesn't come with a remote control.
Yikes!
So you're on your own with the wasps. You have the power to take control of prediabetes. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Chance for scattered showers tonight, otherwise cloudy. Lows dip down to about 42. Winds out of the northeast, around 5 miles per hour. Overcast tomorrow, chance for scattered showers, 45. Cloudy again tomorrow night, mixed precipitation possible at times. Lows dip down to about 34. A dusting of snow Sunday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 65.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And our next guest is a senior research director at Institute for Reforming Government and has spent basically your whole career in education.
Yeah, the bold guy who's like, I'm going to be conservative, but also like really care passionately about public schools. So just trying
what
to find that
niche. What is that Venn diagram like?
You know, it's a small social club of two. We get lunch sometimes. So.
It's lonely,
but it's there. Quentin Glavon, thank you so much for coming on the show.
No, it's an honor. Thank you.
And we were just talking, you're from Wisconsin Rapids.
Yes. Very proud. Mom taught special education there at Lincoln High School for a very long time where I graduated from. Shout out to WFHR if they're listening.
Yes. And you actually, we just talked that you went to high school with my cousins, Brian and Zach.
Yeah, absolutely. I am 6'4", and so they obliterated me in hockey because that's not a tall person sport. So I resent them. But
Fair. I'll
we'll
pass
try
it
and make
on.
This work.
Yeah. Absolutely. So we got connected because obviously we've had CJ on, we've had Benjamin on, and continuing to have the conversations around kind of being on different sides of the aisle, but on very important topics. And since you've spent, I mean, maybe just give a little bit of a rundown of all the different things you've done in education since graduating.
Yes, sure. So I did, there was kind of a famous movie back in the day called Waiting for Superman. I worked for that person for one year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, out in California. And then similarly, ran back to Wisconsin, did 7 years at a wonderful school called St. Marcus Lutheran. It's a voucher school in Milwaukee, best school serving Black students in the state. For a state that doesn't do that very well, unfortunately. And then went to graduate school 1 year for Mike Gallagher in Green Bay. Did some stuff with Titletown Tech.
Oh, nice.
And then now 1 year with IRG as of last week. So yeah, basically really care about choice schools, of course. Really want to see them grow and succeed. But also, I think obviously many people are going to choose district schools for a very long time. And it's really important that we get that right. So have an equal passion for that.
District schools isn't public schools. But
yes.
I guess choice.
Exactly right.
And this is a thing that gets confusing. And I still, even though I've had people explain this to me multiple times, is that there is private schools, there's choice schools, there's charter schools, there's public schools. And it's kind of a murky web of the funding that goes to each one of them. So how do you describe when you try to explain like the ecosystem of available schools in, let's just say, keep it to Wisconsin for now.
Sure. Yeah, really quickly. So maybe like five groups. So homeschooling, of course. And then there are tuition payers at private schools. Do whatever, you know, go get the education that you want as long as you're certified. There are publicly funded students who go to private schools. That would be vouchers. There are publicly funded students who go to charter schools. They have a little bit more independence, but have to meet a couple of higher standards, perhaps. And then there's students in district schools. So your typical, you know, Wauwatosa, your typical Green Bay, the school district that you're enrolled in. The important thing is not necessarily like we don't care like how they are all apportioned out. What we ultimately care about is whether students and families are really satisfied with their choice. So if you go to Salaam School in Milwaukee, a famous Islamic school, had Sue Bird, the WNBA star, come because their all Muslim girls basketball team like went viral multiple times. That's wonderful. But if you go to Appleton Public Schools, which I think is a tremendous school district, that's just as wonderful.
Got it. And so recently, some of the work that IRG is doing, you were quoted in a Wisconsin State Journal. This was earlier this month.
Yeah, huge win for education, a front page article on nerd stuff. So
nerd stuff. And so basically, because I remember doing a story about this or doing a video about this last year, as far as the money that came from ESSER, which is like the one time big chunk of money that came in for schools because of COVID. And with different schools, some of them spending it on general fund stuff because of, in their discretion, other things that hadn't been funded up until COVID that they felt like they needed to put that money towards. And now with that money expiring, basically at the end of 2024, and unknown what's going to happen with the budget, unknown, you know, different referendums, that some districts are heading towards a fiscal cliff. And so I remember talking about this last year, and this was part of what was talked about in this article. So if you just want to kind of summarize where you feel like we're at as far as, let's just keep it to ESSER, because who knows what's going to happen with the budget right
now. Yeah, for sure. So yeah, really quickly, I sat down with 450 individual PDFs, which our education department, DPI as it's called, put out, and put it on a spreadsheet, analyzed it. Basically, right now, we are, you can go to reforminggovernment.org and look at it. Long story short, we've spent about 63% or allocated about 63% of our total funding. We have 2 years to use it. And so we're past halfway. So that's very solid. We really love that. What was surprising is how it was allocated. So you would think, like you said, a lot of continuing expenses just because of how funding worked out in the last couple of years. But the biggest allocation category was actually construction and renovation, which obviously has no direct effects. Most of it has no direct effects on education. And also the kids that were affected most by COVID, they're going to be long gone from their high school or from their middle school by the time it's actually used. So it's 28% of all allocations went to construction. And we do understand Wisconsin is one of the few states where there's no direct funding for renovations for schools. That's something that's put on districts' backs. But at the same time, you know, you have to make these tough choices. And I wish that kids would have come first a little bit more.
And I think that's, I feel like the good faith argument that was made of the trade-off with that is it's just hard. It's hard, right? It's like, to a certain extent, it was money that had an expiration date.
Yeah.
And so to a certain extent, it feels like construction projects or something, because if you start to fund a project that or a program that once that money's gone, you're not going to continue to be able to fund.
Yeah.
Like, I understand it from that point of like, well, we have this. And I think to a certain extent in rundown schools, because I know aren't there some MPS schools that just don't even have air conditioning?
Yeah, exactly. And so that was one of the categories where like, that does affect learning. If you're in May and you're sweating the entire time.
August? Yeah.
Yeah. If I go outside right now, I could not like hold a conversation. So the fact that, you
right
know, 8 hours a day
like
in a school.
Right now it's like 55 degrees.
I'm from Northern Wisconsin. Like, come on.
This is hot.
Yeah. I'm dying here. But yeah. We'll talk a little bit later in the interview about maybe some low cost ways that we could turn things around in schools. But yes, there's a really kind of frightening financial situation coming up.
And so I guess, because one of the things that feels like, if we want to dive into it, what do you feel like is the partisan divide or maybe the ideological divide between how conservatives like you, who really care about education, think about fixing education, and more left-leaning liberal progressives think about fixing education?
Sure.
How would you sum it up?
Yeah. So there are wonderful people working on both sides. I don't want to dismiss anything that has gone on or is going on, but I think these are the traps that we fall into. I think conservatives sometimes fall into like hopelessness, like nothing's ever going to change. Who cares? Sprinkle the magic free market of school choice as if, you know, Catholic and Lutheran schools, like it was the market that made them work and not just like really good human resources systems and like teachers that are willing to take pay cuts so you can make the money work, right? But I think progressives perhaps fall into the trap of treating schools like charities. So when I go to CVS and they're like, hey, do you want to top up a dollar to the Red Cross? I'm like, yeah, who cares? Do I know where that money's going? Do I care where that money's going? No, I trust Red Cross. I assume they're going to do great stuff with it. I think progressives treat schools that way. If we're putting more money into it, it's wonderful and things are going to work out. And they're not paying attention to the content of what is taught in schools. How is it taught? Like holding it like a perfectible enterprise the same way a basketball team or a shipping company is a perfectible enterprise. We can improve schools. We'll talk about like where schools have improved later. But I think those are the traps that we fall into. Schools can change. Schools can improve. And we have the power over that. We shouldn't treat it like something that's hopeless. And we shouldn't treat it like a charity that just needs money dumped into it.
And I guess that's the thing. Like, where is that? And you, since this is your job. Like, I look at, I don't know. So what do you, I actually emailed this to you, but I don't think I had time to look to see what your answer was. As far as what are the kind of gold standards when we're like, what state is doing the best at education?
And it blows my mind. I swear this is not information, misinformation. Top three states, third one, maybe not surprising, Massachusetts.
Is
number three.
Is number three.
Number two is Mississippi. Number one is Florida.
So that's funny because when I
46th in education spending, 44th, yeah, and Florida is 46th. So that blows my mind that those are the top three states.
So that's for spending.
Oh no, that's for reading.
Yeah,
top three: Massachusetts and Mississippi, and then Florida at the top.
Because I think this is the thing as far as how we're grading ourselves.
Yeah,
is because when I Googled it this morning is kind of cross reference. I think the top SEO
yes
Googles were exactly going to be like Wallet Hub. USA. Yeah. And so like those I think came back with like Connecticut, Massachusetts,
yeah,
New Jersey. And I think even in our state, sometimes different studies, different rankings get quoted of how we are doing.
Yeah. So like, let's think, what did those states you mentioned have in common? All very quite high income or at least middle class, and then not that affected by segregation, relatively speaking, to a lot of other states, right? So grouping things by state doesn't really make sense to me in the same way.
Oh, like, interesting.
Like, you know, McFarland public schools are probably going to have higher scores than Madison public schools. Does that mean that doesn't really tell you about the quality of the school? How much are you growing? St. Marcus, the school that I worked at, best school, has lower scores than a lot of the suburbs, but the kids there are growing so much. So if you break it apart, I think people think that this is the 1990s when we really were at the top in education, right there with Massachusetts. But our middle-class kids are 22nd in reading. Our white kids are 21st in reading. So, like, I think we know that Wisconsin is the biggest white-black achievement gap in the country. Yeah. That's very common. But even our more privileged students are right in the middle of the pack, dead average. And that's really distressing to me because it kind of makes people comfortable with the status quo when we could be doing so much better.
So then where do you feel like the best compromises could be happening as we are in budget time? And yes, conversations. And I know, at least from reporting that's come out of the joint finance public hearings. Oh, I should also say, if you're just joining us, we were talking to Quentin Claibon from Institute for Reforming Government. And we're obviously having a very heated conversation around education. And so as we're in the middle of budget season, some of the reports coming out of the four different the public hearings, people are showing up wanting funding for school, wanting to make sure that, you know, schools are prioritized in this budget. Yesterday, we talked to Jennifer Camerood from DPI, and she was, you know, and to her credit, she was trying to talk about all the different reasons as far as where we are with teacher workforce. And she said teachers are getting poached and they're getting better salaries in different states. So as far as in this next budget cycle, from your point of view, what are some of the things that could be compromised on between both sides of the aisle?
Sure. I'll mention one quickly and one a little bit more in depth. So yeah, first of all, thank you so much for doing that yesterday. That was tremendous.
Isn't she wonderful?
Yeah, it was me, her, and then someone I think from Green Bay who were the only ones to write about that report, but it's fascinating, right? So two things. One, a possible compromise between the choice funding going up a bit. I think people don't know this. there more kids go to public schools now than did in the year 2000 because private schools have shut down all across the state. Milwaukee has stayed stable, shut down all across the state. So choice funding, helping choice schools survive would be helpful. And then on the other side, I think you hear about special needs funding all the time. Wisconsin and the federal government combined fund about 3/8 of actual special education costs. If you basically were paying special education teachers something like $42,000 based on like current funding, which is not a median salary for anybody, never mind benefits, never mind supplies. So special needs balanced out with choice could be a really effective compromise where we're funding things that we're actually funding growth. We're funding special needs and we're funding choice schools. Second one would be reading. There's a really exciting reading bill. DPI is actually working with Representative Joel Kitchens to get something passed this year that's going to copy those leading states like Mississippi and Florida. And it should come out, the bill should come out next week or the week after. I think anyone who's really passionate about schools should read that bill and get passionate about seeing something come out of that.
And is this coming back to the phonics conversation?
It is. Just the very shortest version for the audience. They're sounding out words. So if I can pronounce apple, I can pronounce apoplectic, even if I have no idea what that means, right?
I don't think I know what that means.
let's just roll on.
I'll do a demonstration later.
Let's talk a little bit more about that because we do have to go to a break. But our guest is Quentin Claibon, who is the Senior Research Director at Institute for Reforming Government. We're talking about education. If you have any questions that you'd like to say or ask Quentin or me, we still have one more segment left. You can text them in at 844-96-PARTY. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
This is Matt LePay, and you're listening to your home for your Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. This is Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere, and we are talking to Quentin Claibon, who is a senior research director at Institute for Reforming Government and fills that very narrow gap of conservatives who really want to reform and help education.
Go public schools. Go teachers.
I do want to get to kind of your suggestions on the biggest bang for our buck when it comes to improving schools in Wisconsin. But I guess, why do you think that is the... Because we even talked about yesterday that there is a very easy... You know, it's not uncommon that you see someone on Twitter or you see someone who's angry and be like, conservatives want to kill public schools. And I feel like that's sometimes intellectually easy because you see some of the policy stuff. But like... What would you say in response to that when people say that, like, conservatives want to kill public schools and privatize everything?
First of all, it's wonderful to put parents' needs first and kids' needs first. I think, and that goes both directions. Mm-hmm. There are lots of students, lots of experiences where people have gone to a Catholic school. Oh, totally not for me. I need to get to my district school. That's wonderful. They should have that choice. So first of all, that's wonderful and should continue to exist. But secondly, I think just the fact that we put in time and resources and don't necessarily see results, certainly not quick results, which is kind of the nature of schools, but also is we're not doing the best that we could be doing. I think that impatience is really comes from that. So I don't think it's any kind of hatred or trying to destroy public schools.
Conspiracy theory.
Exactly right. It's just like, come on already. Let's get this right. Mississippi changed their direction of their state permanently in 9 years. So like this can be done on a reasonable timeline. And I think maybe in Wisconsin, we're just hoping for that.
And so I guess because I feel you, CJ brought up Mississippi last, I don't know if it was the last time he was here, but one of the times he was here. And so I guess what happened in Mississippi?
Yeah. So they basically said, very, again, apologies if anyone's from Mississippi, but they're just like, look, we don't know what we're doing. Let's start from scratch. They looked at the science of reading, like how do kids actually learn how to read. It's a little bit of a return to what we were doing in the 1990s a little bit. And they basically said, let's leave no stone unturned and completely reform everything. So what were the books that we're giving kids in school? Throw out the bad ones, bring in good ones, go back to phonics. We're going to retrain every single teacher who teaches reading in Mississippi. We're going to change how colleges teach teachers to read, or teach teachers to teach reading. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to notify parents if their kids are struggling with dyslexia or just general reading problems early. And we're going to give them a plan to turn them around. So they basically, it was not rocket science. They did this on $13 million a year, which would be about $30 million with Wisconsin's population. It wasn't so much that it was a big expensive reform. It was just they made sure not to ignore any single piece of the pipeline, and that's how they got it right.
And so they're continuing to get it right. Like, so
yeah,
this has been
2019 was their big coming out party that they were they skyrocketed to like top five. The pandemic happened. Everyone was, you know, kind of wondering what the results would show. They moved up to top three.
So I guess as far as what is feasible in Wisconsin as far as the biggest bang for our buck to move in the right direction?
Yeah. So definite agreement between all sides is coming out on retraining teachers. I think teachers appreciate the pride of having professional development and time and money poured into them. And that's something that both sides can appreciate. I think it sounds like there's going to be some kind of council. We'll see who's on it, but a council that pre-approves curriculum. So still giving districts that local control and those options, but saying, hey, pick good option A, B, C, not whatever, you know, huckster comes in selling you a monorail, you know? And then those are the 2 points of big compromise. What we would love to see is, instead of retraining teachers every few years, what if we got it right in the college environment the first time? Mm-hmm. And I think they've made some efforts to that, but I think they need to go a lot farther. So we'll see if that ends up in the final bill, changing how teachers are taught right now.
Which is interesting because going back to the conversation from yesterday, like the completion rates for the EPP program 100%. I was like, this reminds me of the California bar versus teachers. And I would not expect that test to be so hard that the people who are passing is like 54%.
Right. And imagine how you must feel if you paid for a 4-year degree, maybe went into somewhat significant debt, and you're not even allowed to practice in the classroom because you couldn't pass the test. And there are people who pass, you know, difficult tests. Nurses pass a really difficult test, and we expect that of them. But it's because we've shaped the education around them in a really brilliant way. And I think we should do the same for teachers. They deserve that.
Interesting. So where do you feel like we go from here as far as the conversations of compromise and progressives and the education establishment and everything? Like, what's your prognosis as far as Wisconsin sits right now?
I think there was a lot of distrust sowed in the 2000s on lots of spending for no results. And then there was a lot of distrust sowed the opposite way in the 2010s, right? And so a reset post-pandemic, let's pay for things, but let's make sure it's things that are actually driving results. And we have... copy from other states. There's no need to reinvent the wheel. Let's just steal from other states, make us the best kind of contraption out there. And then I think our kids will have the education they deserve statewide.
And Quentin, can we do something about speaking nicely about teachers again?
I would absolutely love that. As my mom is bewildered by, you know, people having yelled at her.
Is she still teaching?
Just recently retired. Okay. Well-deserved special education teacher, finally made it out. But a reset saying, teachers are the drivers of economic output. They care for our kids. They see them just as much as we do. And knowing that they have a difficult job balancing all of the requirements that we've placed on them is really complex. So the least we can do is give them grace. Expect high things out of them, but give them grace and give them the support that they need to get to a really great education system.
Do you think everyone should have to watch Abbott Elementary?
Oh, that's a little bit controversial. How about this? Everybody go to, you know what? Everybody go to their local school board meeting and genuinely observe the boring stuff, not the exciting stuff, but like passing
a
budget.
Not the sex toy stuff?
Am I allowed to say? Anyway, I'm Lutheran. I'm blushing.
That was our whole topic yesterday. So I obviously am not blushing, but finish your thought.
Absolutely. Yeah. Go to your local, they're deciding their budgets for the next school year. This last budget with the COVID relief, this last budget before there's a big fiscal cliff, this last budget while we're waiting to see what happens with the state budget. Go there, see the process at work. Just listen. And I think you'll see I think you'll be able to judge how your school district is doing for you. And if it's not what you want it to be, step in and make it better.
Very good practical advice. Quinn Claibon, Senior Research Director for Institute for Reform and Government. We'll have to have you back. This was fun.
I'd love that. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. And when we come back, we are going to have our Friday pop culture entertainment news update with Matt Miller from On Milwaukee. And we have more Brewers tickets to give away. So if you want to go tonight, 7:10 p.m. against the Angels, stay tuned so you can have your chance to win. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Don't search through the phone book for hours looking for help. Don't waste time being transferred from department to department looking for answers. United Way's 211 is there to connect you to the programs and services you need. For non-emergency information and referral services, simply dial 211 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Free and confidential information and referral is available throughout Central Wisconsin. Dial 211 and get connected and get answers. How do you locate a support group, professional association, or local organization? United Way's 211 will provide the answers to these questions and more. 211 is your connection to programs and services in Central Wisconsin. Dial 211 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. In this ever-changing world, it is often hard to find the program or service you're looking for. United Way's 211 can assist you locating services. 211 is free and confidential. Trained referral specialists will help you get connected 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211. Every day, people begin a difficult and sometimes desperate search for programs that can provide assistance. United Way's 211 is there to connect you to the programs and services you need. For non-emergency information and referral services, call United Way's 211 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211. With thousands of programs in the database, they can assist you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211.
Here's Heather with the weather.
Well, it's beautiful out there, sunny and 75, almost a little chilly in the shade. Now, let's get a read on the inside of your car. It is hot. You've only been parked a short time and it's already 99 degrees in there. Let's not leave children in the back seat while running errands. It only takes a few minutes for their body temperatures to rise, and that could be fatal.
Cars get hot fast and can be deadly. Never leave a child in a car. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When we got back from the Working Class Heroes radio tour, one of the things that people asked is, what'd you learn? As you're going through rural America, what'd you find? Found angry people, and angry for cause. But the sad reality is they've been fed decades of outrage candy, and they're angry at the wrong people. They're angry at their neighbors. They're not angry at the very wealthy where they should be. Be sure to tune in live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. across the Civic Media Radio Network, and have your voice heard.
I'm Naheem Hines, professional football player and proud supporter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14, and I watched her struggle. But MDA helped her get the best treatments and care, and they also help kids like my buddy Ethan.
My name is Ethan, and I'm 12 years old. Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before. From day one, they've treated me like family at my local care center. MDA is the only one that funds over 150 care centers across the U.S. to help provide state-of-the-art care for adults and kids like me.
For over 70 years, MDA has been transforming the lives of people living with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and other related neuromuscular diseases. They fund the research for breakthrough treatments, care, and cures. And MDA provides support to thousands of families like mine and Ethan's in communities like yours. Thanks to MDA, kids and adults can live life to its fullest. Join us and learn more at MDA.org today.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Serving Central Wisconsin since 1940.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. The U.S. Army Chief of Staff has ordered a total aviation stand down after the collision of two Apache helicopters in Alaska. Three soldiers died in yesterday's crash after a routine training mission. A